you see, we have a number of seats that are missing this evening, so we don't have a quorum as of yet. And so with that said, we're going to change the agenda a little bit tonight to allow for the oath of office to begin this evening's meeting, at which time we'll have the council members seated, and then we'll move on to roll call and the rest of the agenda. Before doing so, before calling our first council member elect, we want to recognize and thank Judge Trish Lyon for proceeding or overseeing the proceedings tonight and providing the oath of office to each of the elected council members. Judge Lyon is a district court judge here in Snohomish County, served nearly 10 years here in Snohomish, and we wanted to say how grateful and appreciative we are that you're here this evening. Thank you for joining us. So I'll ask if you might, Judge Lyon, join me here in front, and we'll have our first individual join us. Mr. Kevin Hanford. And if Mr. Hanford would like to join us here, if you have family members that would like to join as well, they can stand behind us here. We'll give the oath of office, or the Judge Lyon will give the oath of office. And then afterwards, if you'd like to take a picture, we'll allow you to do that. So,
ready?
Yeah.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Kevin Hanford.
I, Kevin Hanford.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution and laws.
That I will support the Constitution and laws.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws.
And the Constitution and laws.
Of the State of Washington.
Of the State of Washington.
And that I will faithfully and impartially perform.
That I will faithfully and impartially perform.
And discharge the duties.
And discharge the duties.
Of the office.
Of the office.
Of City of Monroe, Council at Large.
Of City of Monroe, Council at Large.
For a short and 2-year term.
For a short and 2-year term.
According to law.
According to law.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
One's for the short interim term. And then he gets the certificate.
I
short and four-year term.
According to law.
According to law.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
You sign both and I sign both.
Well, those who have served on council before and those who are currently serving today certainly know that they could not do it on their own. The family is very important to have in your corner. Times get a little tough and so forth. So, Councilor Gamble, if you wouldn't mind, your guest this evening.
I have my wife, Elizabeth, the dude, my son, Aiden, my daughter, Madeline, and then my aunt and uncle in the audience, my auntie and my uncle.
Going solo.
Come on now.
I talked to him, but they wouldn't do it. I'll embarrass them from the back of the
room.
States.
And laws of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws.
And the Constitution and laws.
Of the state of Washington.
Of the state of Washington.
That I will faithfully and impartially perform.
And that I will faithfully and impartially perform.
And discharge the duties.
And discharge the duty.
Of the office of City of Monroe Council, Position 4.
Of the office of the
City of Monroe.
Of City Monroe, Position 4.
For a four-year term.
For a four-year term.
According to law.
According to law.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability. Friend Kendall Williams. Thanks, guys.
Here's Kendall. Come on. You gotta come up.
At least one. We'll pick up on 11.
Councilperson Gehring.
Here.
Cuddeback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
Please join me for the pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Is Lisa Roberts here?
Yes.
Oh, there she is, over in the corner. Okay. Well, we are ready for your presentation. Do you happen to do the...
I'm just
going to
talk to you.
All right. Sorry about that, Lisa. I wasn't looking.
No, that's okay. So I hide behind them. I got here just at the nick of time. So.
Very good. You may use a podium if you want. Or?
Informative and that it influences the conduct. tell you a little bit about who we are. Those of you that are not new to the council know who we are, and those of you that are new might not, so I'll give you a little bit of information about us. We're Washington City's Insurance Authority, and my name is Lisa Roberts, and I'm the Risk Services Manager for WCIA. And we're a self-insurance pool that provides your property and liability coverage. And so for you as a council, that means that we provide your errors and omissions coverage. So if you have an error or an omission, and somebody sues you because of it, we'd be the ones who assign counsel. We'd be the ones that would work with your city attorney to provide defense and paying the damages that we get. So we were formed back in the early 80s as a result of an insurance crisis. We are not an insurance company. We are actually a self-insurance pool made up of 150 other cities and other municipal corporations. So, in essence, the city of Monroe joins with a number of other cities in the state to self-insure your losses. And, of course, we buy excess insurance, and there's, you know, more sophisticated arrangements. But really, you're all in it together. So, for us and all the cities that are in the pool, we thank the city of Monroe for your good loss history. You do a good job, and you can see in your packet that I provided you, there is a risk profile in there that kind of gives you an idea of where you where your losses have fallen within the last 5 years as you compare to the other cities within your actuarial group. And you'll notice that the city of Monroe is doing very well. Part of that is because of the good management that the city has, and part of it is because of the pool that you belong to. We're the largest pool in Washington State, and we're the most financially solvent of all pools in Washington State. And we provide a lot of aggressive litigation, and we believe in aggressive risk management. So we provide a lot of training, free of charge as a member of the pool. And we've noticed as the economy has gotten worse that WCIA has really taken on the large majority of most of our members' staff training. Staff development and training budgets have been slashed. And as a result, we're finding more and more that we're able to pick that cost up and provide that training to our members. So we think that's important. Because training really does reduce losses. And that's what it's about for us, is making sure that you know, you as council people know, that's why I'm here today, that staff knows what their jobs are and how they can get their help. We use an actuary, just to give you a little bit of financial information. We have $33 million in asset assessments to cover the liability and property costs for any claims. We have a $60 million in undesignated member reserves. We have an administrative budget of $4 million, and we handle about 1,800 claims annually. And we have, at any given time, about $6 million in pending litigation. I think our philosophy for litigation is different than an insurance company, and that's what sets us apart from an insurance company. We spend a lot of money to defend our cities, our members. And the reason that we do that is because it's important to set good case law. We, cities, take on all of the different services that most private companies could never provide. We provide police. We provide sewer and water. We provide fire. Well, you guys don't. You have a fire district, but you know what I mean. So the services that cities, municipal corporations provide are, by you know, essence, fraught with liability. So we need to make sure that we defend our cities to the best of our ability. We don't roll over if a plaintiff's attorney files a claim, and we don't think that there's any merit to it. However, if somebody files a claim and the city is liable, we pay it fairly, we pay it quickly, and so you have good coverage. But if somebody wants to just sue the city, and we think that, and the city is in agreement with us, and we don't think that it's that the city has any liability, we're going to defend the city. And we've been very successful in that. We spend a lot of money to do that, because it's not cheap, but we've actually been successful at the U.S. Supreme Court level. It takes about $60,000 to brief, and this was back 10 years ago, to brief at that level, so it does cost money to do that. But that was a police case that we felt very strongly that we needed to take it all the way, and we did, and we were successful in doing that. So that's one of the things that we do. We have a pre-defense budget that we provide, working with your city attorney, no cost to you, pre-legal services, basically, in employment and land use types of situations for you. Land use issues are the things that you deal with as a council person. You can get some free assistance in that area just by calling the OCA and talking to our claims. And again, it doesn't cost you any money. And it really pays off in the long run for us because, for the pool, because we end up getting the thing resolved before it really becomes a big problem. So I said we believe in aggressive risk management. We spend about $700,000 a year providing training to our members for on risk management services. We have a field member services team that's comprised of 9 people. My staff is assigned to each member, so we have 150 members. So I have field staff that actually go out and meet with the city on an annual basis, and basically anytime you need them. We have also a legal consultation program, and I'll tell you, this year has been, the last couple of years, since the economy's kind of tanked, we've had a number of legal consultations. It's a little bit different than the Free Defense program. It's still free, but it's basically helping the HR director in reviewing employment policies. Say the city staff develops the policies, and then they send them to us, and we'll assign them to a employment attorney to review them and make sure that they're, you know, actually legal. And we've had about 80% of our members use that consultation program within the last couple of years. And because there's been a lot of new laws in general, so, and that doesn't cost the members anything, and it ends up saving us money in legal fees in the long run. One of the things that we do with our aggressive risk management is we have what's called the compact. And it's not makeup. It's a agreement that all of our members sign when they become when they join the pool, and it basically says that they will do a number of different things. And one of those things is training. They are required to train, and in fact, the council is even required to train. And this little conversation we're having tonight satisfies your compact requirement for training in that area. So the city attorney attends training. We have training specific to city attorneys when they go to WSAMA, either spring or fall conference. We have a pre-training for them. We have training in each and every department area. The first training always has to do with the audit that we perform each year, and the audit, we call it an audit. It's really a questionnaire, and it's just to help our members in whatever department is being audited that year. The audit is determined by our long-range planning committee, which is comprised of our members, and they determine each year what the topic's going to be. This year it was employment. The year before that, I think it was police. The year before that, it was public works. So each year, you know, we go through a best practices checklist with our members. And there are some mandatory requirements of the audit, and we give all of our members all of the resources free of charge that they need in order to comply. It's been a very successful program. It helps keep losses down, and our members like it. They like the resources that they get in order to help run their cities. So part of that is elected officials training. And one thing that we do have that's different than a lot of pools too is that you are required to do certain things in the compact, and if members don't do that, then there is a financial penalty. Now, I can tell you, I've been with WCA for 7 years, and my department is the one responsible for making sure that their cities comply with their compact requirements. We haven't had one city not comply yet, so we work really hard to help them achieve their compact mandatory. But back in the early days, when the compact was first implemented, we did have one city that basically refused to cooperate, and the mayor had to come and talk to the executive committee, which is comprised of all your city administrators, and explain to them why they were different than all of the rest of the members and why they
tools that we use. We've got other things that we come out and review with our members. But the risk profile is basically a compilation of your last 5 years of losses. It includes reserves, legal fees, and actual payout to the claimant. And so we go over that with our members each year and help them realize in each department where they're having some problems. And then we help them figure out a way to get training in those areas. We have it in either the city itself or we have it in a regional area. So some of the losses that public officials might encounter are, a lot of them are in the employment area. So one of the things as new council people, you want to make sure that you understand what your former government is. You have a strong mayor, former government here in the city of Monroe. If you have questions before you act, you always want to talk to your city attorney because he's there to help you and guide you. There are clear and distinct roles between what you do and what the mayor does. The mayor controls staff. You're the strategic planning body. And so where we see a lot of problems with councils, but particularly new council people, is in their zealousness to be a good council person, they start directing staff. And that's a real no-no. You don't want to do that. That's not your job. You're not in the employment manual. You're not in the chain of command. So your role is a strategic planning role, and your power is in the budget. And as you sit on the dais all together, you have an enormous amount of power. But individually, you really have no power. So it's when you're sitting here and as a council that you, you know, have the power. If you see something that you don't think is quite right, I would encourage you to start at the chain of command, talk to the mayor. Don't start somewhere in the middle. Don't go to the department head. Certainly don't go to the employee, excuse me. Because public employees have enhanced job rights. They have unions. They have grievances. They can file a grievance. That's where we see a lot of problems. So if you think that somebody's not doing their job correctly, then I would encourage you to talk to the mayor and ask him to handle that. Another area that we have problems that we've seen with councils is appearance of fairness doctrine. You want to make sure that you are open, that everything, you know, public disclosure and transparency is here to stay. You don't want to be giving the appearance, even, of talking about things outside of the council, if it's, you know, something that you're going to be addressing as a council. And it's real easy to give that impression, particularly in a smaller community. If the community sees you talking as a group, that it might be a quorum, they don't know you're just talking about your Little League baseball game or, you know, what, how you bowled last night. They might think you're talking about business. So you want to be really careful about the perception that you're talking about business. Conflicts of interest is another area that we have seen problems with council. You don't give up your rights as a citizen because you're on the council, but you have to make sure that you disclose that you have a conflict of interest. So, you know, if you have something, this usually arises in the area of land use. So if you have some kind of conflict, say you own some property or something, and you're going to decide on a zoning issue, you would have a conflict there, and you would need to disclose that you can recuse yourself from voting on something that would be something like that. Doesn't mean that you give up your right as a landowner, but you know, you, as a group, you wouldn't want to have that decision that the council makes be that you basically, it would be, you'd have to start over. It wouldn't count, basically. Okay. And then quasi-judicial due process violations is an area that we have a lot of problems with, and thankfully your city attorney here, Sperm, has some experience in land use, and so you're lucky there. Many of our members don't have the benefit of having a city attorney that has, you know, they have to know a lot about a lot of things, and land use is very complicated. Now, in your, I think you use a hearing examiner here, right?
For some land use decisions, yes.
And we encourage the use of a hearing examiner. It takes the problems away from you as a council. You know, you may want to be able to discuss certain things, but when it's a quasi-judicial type of land use action, you're basically
careful about the perception of talking about something outside of that role, and you have to be very impartial. Where we run into trouble is when you're not. And then, so be careful about that if you have problems with that. You have your city attorney you can talk to. You can give us a call. You can get free legal assistance. We'll work with the city attorney free of charge to help you with those types of issues, okay? Some examples that we can give you for another area that we have problems with council sometimes is leaking executive session types of information. There are only a very few things that you can actually discuss in an executive session, and if you're in executive session discussing them, it's certainly, there's a good reason for that. And for us, it's really important that those things that we're helping you defend stay confidential. Our interlocal agreement provides that we have the final say on if we share that information with you in executive council, in executive session. We want to share that information, but if we can't trust you with our defense strategy, and if it costs the city more money, or if it jeopardizes the defense anyway, we would exclude you from that conversation, and you don't want that. You don't want that to have that happen. So that's generally, we're talking about employment decisions. You'll be talking about those in executive session. You may be talking about some land purchases in executive session. Now you can imagine what the price of land would do if everybody knew that you were negotiating a land price. So those types of things are important to keep confidential. Some examples that were in your vignettes, I don't know if you had a chance to read all of that information, but if you're a realtor and you're a council person, you have to be careful about not leaking certain significant town square plans to your real estate buddies. That I don't have to make this stuff up because these are actual claims that we've had to defend. So, and we had a council person leak purchase price of a wetland property needed to balance land use percentages. So that wasn't really helpful. So make sure that you don't interfere with the defense attorney's confidential work product. In all three of these cases, the council people were reprimanded, they had to pay fines, and they had to issue an apology, and they weren't reelected, and all that kind of stuff, and it's just not fun. It's not the way to start your career as councilperson. So again, I know you guys would never do that, but these are some of the things that actually have happened in the past. So another area is, Open Public Meeting Act violations. We did have a city that tried to oust their city manager, and they did it with serial emails, trying to get consensus with the people that wanted to get rid of the city manager. And then they came back to the council, told the council what they were doing, and they had four votes, and it was done. Well, the public was outraged, obviously, because it was pretty obvious that this wasn't discussed in an open forum, that something was happening behind the scenes. In this particular case, public sued. The council people had to give up their hard drives of their personal computers. That's never fun, have some in-camera review by some judge determining what is relevant and what isn't relevant. They look at your kids or your grandkids' pictures, and it's a real invasion of your privacy, so you want to be careful about that. The court opinion forced the city to pay both the council person's defense attorney fees and plaintiff's attorney's fees. That was over $400,000. That was not an insured cost. That was right out of the city's general fund. The big punishment, however, was, as I said, the public school. And, of course, the incumbents weren't reelected. So, again, public transparency is here to stay. There's study sessions. There's executive sessions. There's other ways that you can talk about these things. Use your city attorney and work it out in other meetings. Or if you need to, if it is an employment situation, you can go into executive session. better to just be thinking ahead of time that you've got great staff that work for you. So, you know, ask staff to, you know, look into it. They'll do the studies, they'll figure it out, they'll come back, they'll report, and then everybody's happy. We did have a situation, as you see in one of the vignettes, that Beatrice wanted, she was a council person, and a community citizen came up and wanted children playing signs erected in her neighborhood. She wanted children playing signs erected in her neighborhood. And so Beatrice directed the public works director to erect these signs. Well, they're not authorized in the MUTCD, the manual uniform traffic control devices. So they're basically illegal signs. And here a council person had just ordered, or at least asked the public works director to go erect these illegal signs. That was not a good situation, because if they did erect those signs and somebody got hurt, what do you think that does? It incurs liability, you know, to the city. So those types of things, if they're in writing and in print, or if they're on TV, you know, most of everything that we do in public session is in some kind of print form. So if it's in print form that you've authorized an illegal sign, it's not going to help your defense. It's not going to be good for the citizens, because there's a reason why they're illegal signs. There's other types of signs you can put up that would be better for the neighborhood. Okay. We touched a little bit on interference with staff functions. That's probably the biggest area that we have problems with. And we've had some rather humorous stories where council people have done really interesting things. This one I thought was kind of interesting, so I put it in here, where the council person flagged, stopped a rookie policeman on the side of the road, paraded him for his dress and performance, and said he was keeping his eye on the officer. And he reviewed his personnel file and criticized his method of policing. And again, he's nowhere in, that's not his job. That's not the council's job. So, what do you think Clyde did? You know, Clyde went to his union. He filed a grievance. Then he went to the newspaper. And it was just, and then he went to the court, got a no contact order against the council person, and that was just not a good situation at all. So of course it was in the paper, and everybody was embarrassed. And all that council person could have done was gone to the mayor and said, you know, I'm concerned about the way this police officer looks or dressing or whatever his concerns were, and the mayor could have taken it from there and done an investigation. Again, making sure that you understand the role, that you work together, but you have a strategic planning role. The mayor takes care of his staff with the help of his administrator, and particularly in the employment function, it's really important. Shopping for zoning and codes and ordinances, we've had all sorts of interesting land use issues with big chain stores, those kinds of things. You might get pressure from your chamber, things like that happen. And again, that's where your city attorney is going to come in and help guide you. But we've had issues with certain cities where they didn't like their city attorney's advice, and then they didn't like our defense attorney's advice either. So they went shopping for the advice that they wanted. And they went ahead and they developed an ordinance that, in our opinion, in our defense attorney's opinion, in the city attorney's opinion, probably unconstitutional. It basically is barring any big box stores from building anywhere within the city, and only mom-and-pop stores can be there. In that type of a situation, it's really problematic. It hasn't been tested yet. We're still waiting to see how that works out, but if there is a chain store lawsuit, it's possible that it's an intentional act, and coverage might not be there. We'll have to see how that works out. So again, these are extreme cases, but just something to be thinking about as a council person, because these things come up. Use of moratoria. This has been an interesting thing with the use of moratoria and adult entertainment. So I'm here to tell you that you can't use moratorium for adult entertainment to develop your adult entertainment ordinances. So hopefully you have adult entertainment ordinances, or well on your way to having them. Because we've had, after the city of Seattle had their moratoria, they had one for about 9 years, and then that was determined to be unconstitutional. So then we had our city of Bothell, who had one for a 6-month rolling moratorium, which was over a course of a year. That was determined unconstitutional. And then we had the city of Kenmore, and they didn't even have it for more than not even quite 6 months, and that was determined unconstitutional. And this was all determined by a federal judge that has been basically historically favorable to pool in land use decisions. So basically, the city of Seattle lost $500,000 in litigation. The same plaintiff. Now, he didn't ever build an adult entertainment club. He just sued and made lots of money against the city of Seattle, city of Bothell. Got easy mediations of $350,000 out of us for Bothell and Kenmore because, the judge had already said that it was a free speech expression of civil rights issue, and that's been extended now by into land use case law by two published opinions. So make sure that if, I'm not sure where you're at with this type of situation, but that's just one of the types of issues that we deal with a lot. Land use in general is very complicated, and it will keep you on your toes for sure. So get help early. Give us a call early. Give your city attorney a call early if you have these types of issues and work them through. Land use moratoria particularly are not easy targets for plaintiffs. One of my favorite stories is taking matters into your own hands. I don't know if you have a chance to read Philip Lindsay next, but my favorite one is the councilperson who single-handedly headed off an adverse land use decision by a council subcommittee. He decided that he was going to waive his attorney-client privilege. And he doesn't have his attorney-client privilege to waive. So instead of the council waiving their attorney-client privilege, which we would not advise you to do, but this individual council person handed his information to the plaintiff's attorney. And of course, the plaintiff's attorney was reading it during open session. The mayor ordered the police chief to go and confiscate the information. Well, there's no crime had been committed, so the police chief couldn't do that. So, of course, what's the plaintiff's attorney doing? He's reading through this stuff, madly. And so he's in essence, has a full defense strategy on what the city was advised to do. So, again, he ended up having to pay a fine, had to apologize. He was sanctioned and eventually wasn't reelected. So I know none of you would ever do anything like that, but understand that that's not your individual right to waive. That would be the council. Another really funny one I thought was when a council person was really interested in this new park that they wanted. The council was negotiating land prices with the landowner, and they were going to build a park there. Well, this particular council person felt that those negotiations weren't going quickly enough, and so he decided he was going to go jump on his tractor and just blaze the trailhead all by himself. So he did that. And, God knows it was a DC 8-9, whatever. I never know the number, but anyway, so he gets on there and blazes this trailhead. Well, what do you think the landowner thought about that? There was no contract at this point, so what do you think went, that price of that land went sky high. The council had to pay for it. It was basically an adverse taking. They just took this guy's land. They hadn't even owned it yet. So they ended up paying about 3 times as much as they would have had to for that piece of land. So, and again, I know you wouldn't do that. These are extreme cases, but they're true. These are actually things that people did not thinking, So they, why that's important that you know how, that these things can happen is we provide coverage for you within the course and scope of your duties as a council person, right? And that's far-reaching coverage. And we look for ways to provide that coverage to you. We want to defend you, and we want to be able to pay the damages. But if you stick yourself out so far on that limb where it's really going to be almost impossible for us to say that was in your course and scope to go out and blaze a trailhead, that's, a little outside the person's scope of your average council person. So when you're thinking about veering off and doing
doing something in your individual capacity rather than as a council, you might want to think about that. Is this, you know, is what I'm proposing to do as a council person, am I going to be covered for this if I mess up? And, you know, if you're not sure, you might want to talk to your city attorney and say, you know, is this really within my person's scope, or is this something that I'm just kind of thinking of doing on my own? Because that's where you're going to get yourself in trouble. If you're anything that you decide as a council, we're right here, we're right behind you. It might not be the right answer, you might screw up. I mean, that's why you buy insurance, right? But, you know, as long as you're operating in good faith and you're doing your very best, you might make a mistake, but that's an insured act. We're going to be right there for you. But it's when you go off and do something intentional or do something out, clearly outside the course of scope, that you're going to end up getting yourself into some hot water. And we might not be able to be there to help you and defend you. So that's just a caution. We're very, very pleased with the city of Monroe. I was the rep here for many years before I became manager of the department. We've always had very good response and cooperation with the city staff here. They're really a pleasure to work with, and I'm pleased to be here and let you know that as council. So they, in every audit that I've ever had, any interaction with your staff, they've done a great job. So, and it's reflected in your losses, so good job to them. Thank you for letting me come and tell you these horror stories. I hope I didn't scare you. But appreciate your time, and do you have any questions for me?
Council, any questions for me?
All right, thank you, and good luck to you, new council people.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you again. This time is set aside for citizens to speak before council on any issues, except any quasi-judicial judicial matter subject to public hearing. We ask that you address council on any other subject. Ask that you sign in before, but that's no big deal. We'll open it to the members of the audience this evening. Would ask that you limit your comments to 5 minutes, and for the record, your name and address would be appreciated. I do have a few that are signed in this evening, and we'll begin with Patricia. I'm sorry, Patricia.
Okay,
name.
So it's me. All right.
Patricia L.
That's me. My name is Patricia Wattenslager. My address is 16886 Whale Street in Monroe. And first, I want to say it was just really a pleasure to be involved in swearing in council members. It was really cool to watch. I've stood before this council on more than one occasion and stated my opposition to H3O's proposal for the occupation of Lake Tai. I hold no illusion that I have swayed the majority of you, but I just want to give it one last try. I think Brandon Monroe is a standout city to bring events here on a quasi-yearly basis is a great one. The difference, in my opinion, and the branding of the Adventureland of Monroe is the permanency of a private business in a public park. I applaud the vision of the city employees to make Monroe a place to visit, to stay, and spend money. But I think that can be accomplished without the water board, the wakeboard. I knew I was going to say that sooner or later. The wakeboard card. The last meeting, I think the mayor felt compelled to have a small tutorial on the history of the Lake Tai for the new council members. A meeting a few times before that, I heard a council member, and I don't remember the exact quote, say something like, if every decision was put to a community vote, there would be no reason for us. I have to say that I think that both those comments were tended to the community, the neighborhood, the people that came in that already know the history of Lake Tai. When I was a junior in high school, my father was elected mayor of Wenatchee. It was a position he held for 16 years, and I watched him make decisions for the good of the city, balancing both the needs of the taxpayer and the needs to create business in the city of Wenatchee. He refurbished the riverfront, which when I was in high school had a lot of hobos in it, and train tracks, and now there are bike paths and parks. And what this did was it drew business to Wenatchee. He didn't have to go in and put in a business to create business. It brought businesses to Wenatchee, and it complemented the businesses that are already there. He then focused his thoughts and plans on the business area of the downtown, and he recreated itself with a rather ambitious cityscape and a successful convention centers. Businesses began a very short commute to the county, pulling serious tax revenue from the city. He then made the very unpopular decision to allow a Walmart to build within the city limits of Wenatchee. He needed the tax base because in Wenatchee, you can be on one street and three blocks later, you can be in the county of Chelan, so you have no city taxes to pay. This was a very unpopular decision, but he knew it had to be done because the city needed the tax base. By the way, that was his last election. So he balanced the revenue for what was good for the citizens, and he tried to keep the parks and the open spaces for the people. I think your citizenship here in Monroe has spoken overwhelmingly against the plan to put a Wakeboard Park in Lake Tye, and I hope that we're listened to. Abraham Lincoln said, "Public sentiment is everything. With public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed." Thank you.
Appreciate the enthusiasm for the speaker this evening, but it doesn't do anything to move the meeting along, so I'd like to have members of the audience withhold their applause. Thank you. Next is Crystal Scherer.
My name is Crystal Scherer. I live at 17313 100th Street Southeast in Snowhill. I have been here several times in front of you guys, and I just wanted to remind you of the packet that I gave you guys a few meetings back on some of the reputations for ACLU claims. They had said that, you know, they needed people who go to this place have an income of $75,000 or more. And in that packet, if some of you still have it, shows that not one city in the entire state makes that much. So where are these people coming from to do this, to come here, to Monroe, of all places, to do the wakeboarding part? And also, they also claim that the events that would be using the lake at their facility would be bringing the city over almost $8,000 in gas and rental cars. I don't know about you guys, but when I go somewhere, I rent my car from the airport, not the city I'm going to. It's just more and more things that I'm seeing just doesn't make any sense. And to destroy the peace and quiet and serenity that is provided at Lake Tye, it's just an insane idea. When I'm having stress at school, trying to go to school to become a teacher, you know, when I'm stressed, I go for a walk around the lake to enjoy the peace, to enjoy the quiet, to get my thoughts together, to be able to go home and take that sociology exam, to take the psychology exam. And then, invariably, I do a lot better than if I were to just stress out over it. If you take away that place of serenity, where are other people going to go, aside from myself, to seek that peace? To go down there and sit on the beach and watch the ducks come up and expect food. And I'll admit, even though you're not supposed to, I've gone down there and watched the ducklings grow from just having hatched into the ducks that they are now. And knowing that the 15 or 20 of them that trust me can come up to me and eat right out of my hands. There is such profound joy and peace in that. I took a friend who had never done it before. He's a special person. And he was in a serious mood of depression, threatening suicide. I took him down there and had him feed the ducks. And he laughed for the first time in months. And all thoughts of suicide left. He was happy, and he started to succeed, all from experiencing such a simple thing as feeding the ducks down at Lake Tye. If you put in this wakeboarding park, the ducks aren't going to want to stay. They're not going to want to be in an area that stresses them. So they're going to leave, and yet another moment of peace is going to be gone just by simply placing this wakeboard park there. I just ask that you guys seriously consider that, and just the peace that one can get from there before you make your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Stephen Warner.
Thank you. I'm going to follow up on the Lake Tai issue. I'm a frequent kayaker over there, probably four times in a week. And it's a small lake, it's a delightful lake, quiet. The trail that goes around it is a very delightful place as well. And I, for one, would not like to see towers and cables polluting the lake, obstructing it. And I would just like to add that my thought to the prior one, that I would be 100% in favor of not doing wakeboard at Lake Tai. Okay. Just too small. It's nice the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have anybody else who has signed up this evening, but as always, we'd like to open the podium to members of the audience who might be addressed council.
Well, actually, I did, when I first came here, about 6:30, put something on Petey's desk.
Yes.
Sounds fun and exciting. However, the city should not be part of it. The City of Monroe can barely afford basic services to citizens. Wakeboarding is not a service that is a necessity to the majority of residents. In view of the current financial deal, find investors, then come back to the city for approval. And also, why not look at where Pete's Party Fit used to be? Get Cabin to come in and make that bigger. And have your wakeboard park there. That's all. Thank you. Certain minimums are met, in much the same way that the Walmart contract is moving forward if certain minimums are met. So I'm concerned that nothing's really in place effectively for that. Also, H30 says that the X Games won't likely have monster events, but nothing seems to be in writing actually limiting the event size. And so I'm concerned that we don't have anything effectively in place to minimize the impact on my community, the impact on the lake, the impact on our traffic, which we know is already, you know, perfectly snarled. So I'm concerned about that. These are things that I didn't see in the research that I did. And then with regards to the environmental impact statement, it sounds like one is planned, which is fantastic. But especially where event size comes in, that seems like something that could be easily tailored to the EIS planning. So if you plan an EIS for, say, an event of 10,000 people, you know, that kind of typical attendance, that might have a different outcome than, say, an EIS that has a typical attendance of 20,000 or 25,000. Now, these are just generic numbers, but I do think that we might want to err on the size of caution and plan for larger than projected numbers of attendees by a significant margin to make sure that our environment is being protected. I said a random question. You guys probably don't want to answer. I did not find it online. The building that they're planning to construct, what happens to that if it goes away? Do they stay the owners of that and they can lease it out at will, or does the city get it? Yes, you do. Okay, thank you. I couldn't find it, so I appreciate that. And then in terms of the rush to move forward for completion by July 1st, I'm wondering what is the real impact to the city of Monroe if we just wait till next July 1st? Are we suddenly going to become less attractive as an event venue? Are these people just not going to want to come here because we didn't rush through to get everything done? I don't think so. And I'm concerned that the council is not taking, and the mayor is not taking adequate time to effectively evaluate this in a way that is respectful of our community, our wishes, the wishes of the people who use that facility, whether they're Monroe residents or not, the wishes of the people who couldn't show up here because we are really busy and not everybody can make it to the meetings, especially when they're scheduled for the first Tuesday of the holidays. Many people are still out of town or exhausted. So I guess it just seems like, as many people have said, we're rushing forward needlessly. This is an enormous public resource, and we are about to sign it away for private gain. And that does not sound like something that I want the city council that represents me and my home and my friends to do without very, very careful consideration of all the factors, including endless public comments. Thank you.
Daryl Reichstein. I live at 1219 5th Place in Kirkland, Washington. I represent Lake Tahoe Associates, and we own the building just adjacent to the lake. And when we purchased Lake Tahoe back in 2009, it was quite empty. It was a beautiful building, but empty. We have since invested over $2 million to attract businesses such as Everett Community College, dentists. There's a new dentist that just opened up, an oral surgeon. New insurance agent is coming into the building. We just leased a space to a salon. As you know, Sockeye's is there, Subway is there. So there's a mixed feeling, I think, amongst the mix of tenants. But from a landlord's perspective, we have concerns, a lot of concerns. Mainly the thought of detracting business away from Monroe. I mean, we've been, like I said, when we bought the building, it was probably 75% vacant. We've just gone over 80% occupancy. So in 3 years, we've been able to do quite a bit of business there. We've attracted new businesses. We've brought in a new tax base. We're afraid that this could possibly detract, and maybe every community college looks at us and says, no way, we're going to renew our lease, because now we've got noise issues. You know, so our biggest concern is the nuisance that this could provide. Traffic impacts are huge, because obviously parking to a landlord is everything. If we can't lease space to somebody who needs parking, and they show up to the building to look at space, and the parking lot is completely full, how are we going to police that? You know, so we have big concerns over that. Already there's a couple of events that come here, I think twice a year. We've had large impacts on trash, security. We've had to hire extra security for the building, just from a secure standpoint. So there are a lot of concerns, you know, from the landlord's perspective, that we honestly, it scares us. And one of the things that we were drawn to on this building was the peaceful and the quietness of that lake. The fact that tenants can go out on their decks and enjoy a nice, quiet, you know, break from work or a break from a class. The fact that there could be eight pulley stations and huge towers, it's going to really detract from those views. And so we just wanted to submit a letter just on behalf of the landlord. I'm just sorry, the copies, but that's, I think, pretty much all we have to say.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate the time, and we look forward to talking more about this in the future.
Thank you.
Talent. As a citizen of Monroe, I do vote. I vote in every election. students, even though there's certain things about Highway 2 and 522 that drive me crazy like they do all of you. I love Lake Tahoe. My neighbors love Lake Tahoe. I don't know if I've gone over. I had just a couple of points. If you do move ahead, please consider disability access. There are also disabled citizens. Will they have access? Can they get there? Can they use it? Are they considered in this? That's a big one. I'm hoping you don't go forward because you're going to sit at that lake for 20 minutes, see those animals, close your eyes, take a deep breath, and say, you know what? This is not what we want for our lake. Thank
thank you to those who participated tonight. One individual said they don't do this on a regular basis, and it can be a little nerve-wracking at times, but it is your voice that we do appreciate hearing. Thank you for your thoughts and comments. Council, we will close that portion of the agenda and move on to the consent agenda. Councilor Gearing.
Thank you, Motion to approve the consent agenda.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Williams to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Moving on to final action number one. Mr. Sachs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The resolution in front of you tonight was presented to you on December 20th. This is our sixth public meeting on this issue. It's a resolution of intent to enter into a cable agreement with H3O. It allows for the city to work as the property owner with the proposed applicant, H3O, to work through the permitting process to work towards pulling together a lease agreement with H3O to operate the cable park at the time. Addressed many of these issues on December 20th. I can go through it all again for the newer members if you'd like, or field questions as they're needed. Sure.
Jeff, why don't you move forward and provide the overview?
Okay. The agreement that you see in front of you is a resolution, and as with Monroe City Council procedure, a resolution is. So the resolution is the council's intent. It's a non-binding intent.
move forward with a decision. What this decision will do, resolution will do, it's an interim step. As we went through the process, we did an RFP, we reviewed RFPs, we accepted East Rio's RFP. We then went through the process of negotiations towards a lease, and what we've determined as we've worked with East Rio's attorney and our city attorney is there's still a few issues that need to be resolved. Specifically, probably the biggest issue is indemnification. It's not a hurdle we can't overcome, but it's a rather complicated issue that needs to be worked through with due diligence. The resolution in front of you is the next step forward in the approval process of a cable park at Lake Tahoe. This resolution basically states that the city, as the land owner of the property, will work in cooperation with the applicant, H3O Development, or their assigns, whichever LLC they create to operate the Monroe Cable Park, through the permit process, and basically not disrupt that effort from a real estate side, as a landlord side. When we work through the regulatory side, the permit application, that permit application may turn out whatever. We don't know what that permit application will produce, but what this resolution will do is give H3O, as the developer, the confidence to spend the money for the permit, the SEPA checklist documents that will be required, the extensive survey requirements of the lake itself to determine the area of operation, the area for their final area of operation, which will be a legal lot that will be created through this process, as well as the siting of the towers and that sort of thing. So it's a non-binding letter of declaration of intent. It authorizes mayor and staff to move forward with the process. It reserves our authority as the regulator of inside the city of Monroe, and it will take effect immediately upon passage and signature by the mayor. Exhibit A basically is the bones of the business portion of the lease contract. We can walk down through those real quick. The cable wakeboard course will be located on the southern portion of Lake Tahoe. And when I say southern portion, the swimming beach will be open and accessible. The boat launch will be open and accessible. The model boats will still be able to operate on the south end of the lake as they're accustomed to operating. There will be a channel, an open channel along the west shore of the lake for swimmers and boaters to move into the northern portion of the lake. The lease and related agreements will be entered into between City of Monroe and H3O LLC or its affiliate. So that lease document will be prepared as we work through this process, as the legal description is created, as the insurance and indemnification language is straightened out. And when we get a lease document that we feel comfortable with, both as the city and as the applicant, then we'll bring that lease document forward for signature. And if it's approved by council, that approval process still has to take place. The initial lease term would be 10 years with 3 5-year extensions. The city would have special event rights at Lake Tahoe during the lease term. That area, that's kind of still, we're trying to figure out what that means, but it's roughly 12 days of the year the city could inform H3O and work with them and say, we're doing the Mastercraft wakeboard event, we're doing the triathlon event, we're doing the fishing derby event, where we can ask those folks, hey, we're going to do this other event, we're going to shut you down for a period of time. It could be a day, it could be half a day, it could be 4 days. But there will be a period of time where the city can work with the operator to do that. There's two ways that the lease will provide revenue. Initially, there's a basic minimum rent payment that will be made each month. Actually, it'll be paid quarterly, but it'll be a monthly payment. Initially, it's $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year. The second year, it jumps to $1,500 a month, $18,000 a year. Third year, it's $24,000. And in following years of the lease, it's anticipated to be $24,000 also. In addition to that, will be a 2% gross revenue sharing that will be paid to the city on a quarterly basis. discounted initially by 1% until a figure of $45,000 is credited back to H3O as a concession for them basically building a $300,000-plus building, dollar building, that will remain in the city's possession at the end of the lease. A facilities plan will be jointly agreed to by the parties prior to the permit application and will include amenities to be built and improved, built and improvements to be titled and remain at the end of the lease. Approximately 2,500 square foot building will be constructed at H3O's expense. H3O will comply with all applicable regulatory permit and approval standards and procedures, and risk allocation between the properties will be addressed by appropriate provisions governing insurance indemnification in similar matters. The WCIA representative was here today and kind of filled you guys in that we're self-insured and it's in our best interest and the citizens' best interest to assure that we have language that protects the deep pockets in this case, which is the city of New York. So that's a brief overview of the resolution. And what we're asking you to tonight to do as staff is to approve this resolution. It will allow H3O to move forward with the initial permit process. It will also allow them to engage with SETEC, the manufacturers of the towers that produce in Germany and have a rather lengthy lead time. Their goal is to open their doors on July 1st of this coming year. And that's the synopsis. Be happy to answer any questions.
Before the council asks any questions, this the overview that we have here tonight is as proposed this evening, or proposed by H3O. Councilmember Falk did bring up a very good point last week, and that was with regards to the negotiation. If you feel the need to discuss the contract and negotiations that will have an impact on the lease agreement, I think that discussion is best made in executive session. So any questions that you might have with regards to what is proposed tonight, feel free. But any comments with regards to direction and strategy, I think the attorney would also agree that that would be best done in executive session because we are in negotiations, potentially going into negotiations for lease agreement. City Attorney Bob.
Very briefly, just to echo the mayor's comments, I think that's entirely appropriate. Under the Open Public Meeting Act, the council does have the ability to return into executive session to discuss the minimum price at which real property will be offered for sale or lease. So to the extent that your discussions will involve the consideration that the city will be bargaining for, an open session discussion of those matters would have a detrimental impact on the city's bottom line, that would be appropriate for executive session.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions for Mr. Sachs on any other issues? Is there a need on behalf of the council for potential of Councilmember Pettit?
Yeah, my button pushed for me. I had a question about the non-binding resolution. I mean, since it's non-binding, why do it?
I think Mr. Sachs, who's, I believe, been negotiating more directly with the project proponents, can probably speak to the applicant's concerns. But just to reiterate the point that I think that you understood and made, this is non-binding. This is simply a statement of the council's public intent to at some point enter into some type of lease or other agreement with these particular project proponents. It doesn't bind you to do that. What it does, in a practical sense, is authorize the mayor and his staff to work with H3O to begin the permitting process. Otherwise, H3O, because it doesn't own or have legal control over the property at issue, wouldn't have the ability to submit for permits, and this enables the city to do that in cooperation.
Okay, I appreciate that answer. My other question, though, is I thought I saw in the resolution that even though it's non-binding, if we do enter into a lease agreement, these basic terms will be accepted into the agreement. Did I?
That's correct, Councilmember Cadillac. That's actually the gist of Section 1 of the resolution. But again, calling your attention to the specific text in that section, the city is completely reserving its right to change or otherwise depart from or add to any of those provisions. I think that, and Mr. Sachs can correct me, the intent of the exhibit is simply to enumerate those deal points that staff has tentatively agreed to with the applicants of the project, and they can be changed, and they will not be binding on either party unless and until an actual lease agreement or some other type of binding contractual arrangement is executed.
Then I guess my next question would be, why include these basic terms in the resolution at all? Why even reference them if we can change, you know, if it's non-binding and we can change them?
That's an excellent question, and again, defer to Mr. Sachs, who's had the frontline direct communication with the applicant, but my understanding is that this will give the H3O contingent some peace of mind, some assurance that they have at least agreed in principle with the City Council about what the, as Mr. Sachs indicated, the bones of an ultimate lease or other agreement will be. So even though the parties can depart from those, this represents and reflects the party's good faith understanding of what the main constitution of that agreement will be.
So if we do agree to this, then we're saying on our good faith, these terms are acceptable barring any other changes, like anything other new information comes up our way. So
that is your statement of intent, but again, it's non-binding. You have reserved expressly, if you go forward and pass this resolution, your ability to change your mind, period. That's unequivocal.
Okay.
And if you'd like, you can even add more categorical broad language there if you prefer. We can easily delineate that if the council so prefers.
Okay. Thank you.
And just to add, the motion in November to staff was to go and negotiate a lease agreement or a development agreement, I think was the language that was fundamentally used at the time, with H3O. And during that effort, the mayor and many others, many staff members sat down with H3O and beat through the contract language that we extracted from Allen, Texas, and massaged it into a draft document that we still are working on today. Because of that, I felt it very appropriate, because a lot of these are the questions that I've heard over and over and over from council and people in the city. What's in it for the city? And I just felt that this was, we have come to good faith agreement on these terms. If we have to adjust those terms, so be it. However, I thought it was appropriate at this time to, as we take that next step forward, and again, go back to, this is our sixth public meeting on this, and each step along the way, the majority of the council has affirmed the decision to move forward with the cable park. And each time it gets a little tighter and a little tighter. And I think this is a really good interim step prior to getting that lease document put in place. Because truthfully, until we really define their scope of work and area of operation and what they're going to need, that lease document is a very difficult thing to write until we really understand the operation and the permit process that each of those going to have to go through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, sorry. Councilor Third, I believe finished.
Oh,
Michael.
Go ahead. I have more, but I'll ask him.
You sure?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I just have one question.
Yeah.
I may have missed this. My data is from council, but what exactly, how much money is the city putting into this?
Up front. $0.
And intended in the future?
What we will be doing is accepting a reduction in the lease payment of $45,000. So the terms of the agreement are we will receive a basic lease payment plus 2% of their gross revenues during the term of the lease. And as a concession, we're going to discount their 2% by 1 percentage point until they, in essence, retain $45,000 rather than pay that to the city. So are we paying H3O?
Mm-hmm.
The logic could be equated both ways. We're reducing them. We're offering an incentive. Are we paying them? Perhaps. You can look at it both ways. It's not uncommon for a landlord to offer an incentive to a tenant to bring them into the facility.
But there's no immediate out-of-pocket expense.
No,
money given to the city.
Staff, we determined that keeping the real estate portion of the contract and the regulatory portion of the contract is the best way to proceed with this transaction. That when money comes in for a permit for a water meter or a sewer hookup, that money works its way into different budgets inside the city to be used for different purposes. And if we were to pay for those or do those procedures up front, I question whether those accounts will be properly credited with that money if the city just does those things. So by having H3O do all the work up front, the money goes through and it actually pays for the permit process. The planning department isn't 100% general fund operated facility, so or the park. So having that fee money coming up front from H3O makes sense.
There was, I think, language in here talking about we're the co-applicant and like the permit. Are we the co-applicant in the permitting process? And explain to me exactly what that means. Are we obligated then to go through the whole EIS? Or, I mean, I assume maybe Brad knows this, but is Shoreline Management Act apply to this? Because it's a body of water. And how are we as a city involved in all that process?
We're co-applicant because we own the property.
What does that then mean as far as all these permits and applications and costs for it?
What that means is we won't object to a third party coming in and seeking permits on our property.
Okay. So that's it?
That's the intent of this document. Yes.
Okay.
We're not paying for those permits, those studies, the studies.
Jeff, we yield for a question on the specific issue. So the statement was made that we can't go... They won't go forward with this without a resolution. That's the piece that is the most important permit. Is that what I understand?
That is an essential element of this. How can you seek a permit on a piece of property you don't own?
Okay.
We wouldn't accept the permit application. This also says that Exhibit A fits within their business parameters. And they feel that that works with their business model. By attaching Exhibit A to that, they're saying that they're willing to commit an extensive permit process and probably commit to purchasing towers on the back of this resolution.
Right, but we just talked about the
non-binding intent.
Non-binding.
However,
the biggest piece is you're saying is if we don't pass this resolution, at least the permitting piece, they can't even do an EIS.
They cannot proceed.
So that's really the big thing.
That's a huge portion of this. If we didn't proceed in that direction, what we would in essence have to do is hammer through the lease agreement and really come to terms. We would probably have to plat the property in advance. We'd have to define their area of operation. And the risk goes up for the business owner substantially in that process.
Is about the executive session, because at no time have we really gone into executive session and discussed any of these bullet points. And while I understand this is not binding, we can change any of these, I'm sure the intent is that we can scrap these and start all over with 9 bullet points. So and I have specific concerns about 3 of the 9 that I would like, and I don't know if tonight's the right night to do it or whenever, but I guess I would be in favor of having that executive session so we can talk freely, because we really haven't had an opportunity in closed doors to, it's hard to negotiate when the applicant's out here, so I'm just asking for that at some point.
Absolutely. I think that it would be appropriate in moving forward towards that the council should decide towards the lease agreement. I think that it would be necessary, actually, at times to have those discussions. As we move forward, so or if we Mr. Sachs, tonight the question before council is
approval of this resolution. first step to give the applicant, H3O, the confidence that the city will allow them to move forward with their business model and not necessarily impede as a landlord through that process. We may impede through the regulatory environment depending on what shows up during the permit application. These guys are going to be committing anywhere from $75,000 to $400,000 worth of investment on the backs of this resolution. So that's what we're asking for.
They're going to invest that before they have a lease agreement?
I haven't said that. It gives them confidence to move forward to do that.
Sounds like there's some questions that may need some direct or some information, further information directly as it relates to the lease and discussions towards the lease. If council desires of entering into an executive session for the purpose of the lease discussion this evening, if they'll be able to answer a question or two, I don't know. It appears that there's
some. Suggest that it would also be appropriate for the council to include as a basis for the executive session the discussion of legal risk with legal counsel, just to make sure that whatever Councilmember Williams' concerns are covered in the broader scope. And then also to remind the council, as I think the speaker, Ms. Roberts from WCIA, indicated to be coming in, the principal subject for discussion in the executive session in this context is specific to the price issue. The consideration that the city is going to be receiving from a potential lessee, broader policy questions concerning whether and what extent to lease the property are appropriate for open session, just for the public's information. And with that clarification, the council is agreeable to that. The basis for the executive session would be RCW 4230.10, 1C, to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease, and pursuant to RCW 4230.10.1i to discuss legal risk with legal counsel. The executive session is anticipated to last
30 minutes.
Approximately 30 minutes, and the council is anticipated to take some open session action when you reconvene.
Okay, with that said, then we'll ask the audience to vacate the chambers. Council will vote with the executive session. Okay, thank you for your patience. We are out of executive session. Back into regular. Councilor Geer.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to go ahead and make a motion and then we can have further discussion. So I move to adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Monroe, Washington, declaring the City Council's intent to enter into a lease agreement with H3O LLC for the development and operation of Cape Wake Forest Recreation Facility at Lake Tyke Park. It's resolution number 2012/001. You want me to read the whole title? I can do that too.
We'll have City Attorney do that on the second.
Second.
All right, motion has been made to approve resolution number 2012/001 by Councilmember Geary, seconded by Councilmember Camp. And for the record, have City Attorney read the full and complete
seem to be the feeling that the feeling loan we received, so we're lucky and we should move forward with it. I don't believe that's necessarily true. Just because we have one proposal and only one proposal doesn't mean we need to accept that proposal. It might mean that we need to spend more time and research and look on, is this the direction we want to go? I think we need to, some comments were made about the Cadman site. I think even though that's a couple of years out, I think we need to do our due diligence as a city and investigate that. Would that be a better option? You know, is there a possibility of making that an extreme sports area center where you build a wakeboarding park, trail run, a half-pipe skateboarding park? If that's where we want our destination, why not really research and see, is that a good option for that area? And I think most residents would probably welcome that. The other thing that has weighed on my mind consistently over the last month is, as Mr. Sachs said, we've had public comment time. We haven't held a formal public hearing about this, but we've had a lot of public comment time. And the overwhelming, I kept track of numbers every meeting, the overwhelming number of city residents were not in favor of this. Now, some of my council members might say, well, that's what happened in Walmart. That's true. But this city was in a completely different position with the Walmart situation. We don't own that land. We own a large debt on that property. You know, certain decisions sometimes do need to be made due to economics. I do not believe this is one of those decisions that we should look at the economics. There's a lot of other reasons to not move forward at this time with this park. When I first heard the idea, I thought, this is exciting. You know, it is exciting. I think there could be a lot of opportunity here. I don't think we've done enough due diligence to really figure out if this is the best situation for Lake Tahoe. When we originally put in our plan a public-private partnership, you know, we heard a couple of comments from people who were involved in that process that the cable park wasn't one of those things that we thought about. Doesn't say it's not a possibility, but it wasn't originally intended. So when that plan was developed, it took time, it had a lot of public comment. You know, we received this proposal in October. It's January. I've talked to business owners along Frylands. There's business owners who are not in favor of this because it will change the character of that whole area. We heard from a business owner of the Lake Tahoe building tonight. It will change the character of that lake. And I know tonight, moving forward, doesn't bind us in any way as a city, but it's sending a message that we want to move forward and we see this as the vision for Lake Tahoe. And I cannot in good faith do that because I think more deliberation, more research on the Cadman site needs to happen. And my job up here is to listen to the city residents and to not move forward when I see an overwhelming residents who do not want to move forward with this. That being said, it could be 50-50, but I haven't heard from the, you know, overwhelming city residents or business owners along the area who said, yes, do it. So at this point, you know, I'm going to vote no on the resolution. I think it's in the best interest of the applicant to come forward with a lease agreement, you know, if it even been debated at that time. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Fetter. Okay, seeing you on the line. Take a vote on the motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion does pass 4-3 with Council Members Petback, Davis, and Gamble in opposition. 2011 State of Row entered a statement of board agreement. No, wrong one. This this item was requested by Councilmember Gearing with the support of Councilmember Rodriguez at 426-2011. The Councilman and the public hearing was held on 5-17-2011. The resolution was approved, authorizing an advisory ballot vote, and it was adopted on 7-19-2011, included with the November ballot. Citizens voted in favor of term limits by a large margin, and since this was an advisory vote, it is not binding. Council can either modify the ordinance attached to the resolution, leave it as it is originally written, or vote not to adopt term limits. The recommended action this evening is to approve as a second and final reading the ordinance 001-2012 adopting term limits for the cities and rural public officials. Councilmember Gearing.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Hanford. To approve a second and final reading of the ordinance 001-2012 adopting term limits for the City of Monroe public officials. This time I'll have the city attorney read the official document for ordinance title.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ordinance number 001-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, amending Title II MMC Administration and Personnel by enacting new Chapter 226. Term limits for elected officials thereto, establishing limitations on the term of office for the positions of council member and mayor, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Thank you, Attorney Law. Any other questions, comments? Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Statement of work was effective through December 31st, and I would like to continue with the service for the month of January and then monthly thereafter. So on a monthly basis.
So the recommended or the action request of this evening is to authorize the mayor to sign the Dallas chain request form for an on-site desktop support for the month of January and on a monthly basis
monthly.
Thereafter. Your motion to approve. Questions from council? Councilmember Hamlin.
Thank you. Just any idea how many months are you thinking this is just another month or so, or this is going to be a
long-term
thing we're going to need?
Just for background for the newer council members, the IT department went through reduction last year of the two. We then went into a agreement with Denali to bring an IT support. What's his title? I can't remember.
Desktop support.
Desktop support individual who has been instrumental in helping to maintain the computer systems throughout the police department and the city hall. The work has been satisfactory, and that's why we're asking for the extension. But want to leave that up to our open to council to be able to determine that agreement at any time or move forward in a more permanent manner after further reviews of the work. At this point, as I said, work has been satisfactory. So the request tonight is to continue. Contract of the service at this time.
sorry.
In 2011, the city entered into a five-year lease agreement with Icon, who was on our master contract list for a color printer in City Hall. This is the only color printer we currently have in City Hall. The lease expires in June of this year, and it is based on our usage and history. It's recommended that we replace this particular Canon printer with a Ricoh Canon printer immediately, not costing the city extra money. Icon will eat the remainder of that 6 months, and this will be, it's a newer model, offers additional scanning features that our existing printer does not, and it will be an immediate savings of $282.09 per month to replace what we have. So I'm authorizing the mayor to sign this agreement to extend the service contract for this lease.
Any questions for Denise?
I'm sure it's in here. I looked at it briefly, but is it another 5-year lease?
Yes, it is.
And these are non-cancelable, like you can't cancel it, and you got to keep the minimum payment even if you use. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, I entertain a motion to authorize the mayor to sign the image management product schedule under the state and local government master agreement with Icon.
So moved. Second.
I observe Councilmember Cuttipan as the maker of the motion, Councilmember Camp as the seconder. Any other questions for Denise? All right, with that said, take a vote at this time. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Well, we are at the of our meeting this evening for council member reports. During this time, I do want to raise a couple of issues for council members to consider, and that is that the need for designation of members. And the notice we got today, PD, was from, I forgot to print it and bring it.
Maybe
the Alamo. It wasn't the
Snow is coming tomorrow.
No.
Oh,
no.
Oh, that's it.
I don't know if I saw that. I haven't made my way through all my emails yet.
I forgot to bring it.
We have a whole bunch of items listed. You'll see it on the extended spreadsheet. You might see what you're trying to refer to. I listed everything I could think of on the 17th. Of January.
This one they needed a designation by January 6th.
Okay, but it might be listed in the January 7th. I know the health board usually needs it. S would the transit? Would that be it?
Look under January
17th. No.
SCC,
yeah.
Snohomish County Cities.
Snohomish County Cities, that's right.
That is what that should be. There will be people who run for election to board positions.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if anyone is interested in the board positions, the SEC Executive Board, President, Vice President, Treasurer, looks like Finance Committee, Executive Board, Operations, PSRC, Transportation Board. Did you
Secondly, it looks like, I think on January 17, at least on the extended agenda, it looks like we have some of the stuff that you were just talking about. Were you looking to that?
No,
tonight?
No, I'm just trying to draw attention
to
so you give some thought before that now.
Okay, great. I saw that here and you were talking about it. Otherwise, nothing else, Nathan.
That's where I'm dead at.
Council to notice the covered badges of the police officers. This is honoring the slain park ranger Margaret Anderson, who was murdered on January 1st in the Rainier National Park, and we will continue to have her badges covered until after the memorial service.
Denise, anything further? Jeff? To coincide with the comments from the chief, want to draw attention as part of my report here to January 29th. January 29th, the Monroe Police Department, along with the Monroe Correctional Department, is sponsoring a 5K run in memorial to Jamie Bendel, who was slain last year. So it'll be a 5K run from 9 till noon, I believe. Calendar, but a great opportunity for you to come out and show your support for Jamie Bendel. All proceeds go to Chief, do you remember the organization that the proceeds go to?
It's Behind the Badge.
Right. Which is supportive of families of fallen major officers. That's what I have for the report this evening. Draft agenda for next week. We will have a public hearing on the moratorium for cannabis collective gardens. We have the still under reappointment of.
I will be moving all of them. I in error put a wrong date on one of them,
okay.
So we'll move them to the 17th.
And that's the reappointment. The board members.
Right.
My department reports draft agenda. Anything further for next week that council would like to place on the agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I anticipate a purchase and sale agreement from NextCore, so we'll probably be discussing that.
All right. Add that to the agenda. Diane?
Under study session topics, I'd like to bring back the reserve policy.
Very good. Council, anything that you would like to have back this week? And looking at the extended calendar, anything there that you'd like to see changed, added, or moved? Okay, City Attorney Lowell has stated you had need for a brief executive session, but first, Councilor Gearing.
I wanted to consider adding to the future agenda, and specifically what was talked about tonight from WCIA with regard to leaking executive session material. We had talked in the past, and I believe it was during 2011, about the ethics ordinance and a potential kind of a hole or a loophole there about not being able to talk about, having information not being able to talk about. So I'd like to get that back on here for a discussion, perhaps a joint session at some point with the ethics board. To do that. So it certainly doesn't need to be this month. I want to put that back on the radar.
It's definitely been on our radar. Edie and I have been, or Edie has been communicating more with the ethics board. There's been some instances of board not being able to do the absences and so forth, but they did recently.
They'll be meeting again on January 19th, and they did have hopes of hearing of a meeting date to meet with council and
great.
Discuss.
So they have to. So that did not fall off the radar at all. Thank you. We will look
Mr. Mayor. Pursuant to RCW 43-31-1I, the council will convene an executive session for the purpose of discussing pending litigation with the council.